Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing, Doug? Hello, everyone.
Good. So where did we send Grant on assignment?
I don't know. I believe you're the only one that knows that, Doug. I think it's a secret.
Hey, that was a good call. Yes, it's a very, very hush-hush type secret, and I'll never tell. Well, actually, he's just kidding. Grant's just off tonight. But then again, we could say he's off every night because he's not here to defend himself, couldn't we?
Well, that's absolutely correct.
Wait till he gets wind of this. Anyway, we're happy to have you with us tonight, John. Thanks for sitting in. John would normally be screening calls, but tonight we've got Mike Jones with us screening calls. And so if you'd like to call in and ask a question, we'd love to hear from you. The numbers are on your screen. And you can also join us in the chat room, which if you're not already, please do so, and you can ask questions there too. Tonight we have as our guest Dr. John Climo. He is widely considered to be the world's leading authority on the subject of channeling and the author of the definitive work on the topic, that is, Channeling, Investigations on Receiving Information from Paranormal Sources, and that's been translated into 8 different languages. Dr. Climo has an undergraduate and graduate degrees from Brown University and a doctorate in psychology. He has been continuously teaching in doctoral programs for the past 34 years and is currently starting his 11th year as a core faculty member, now full professor in the clinical program at the San Francisco Bay Area campus of the American Schools of Professional Psychology, Argosy University. Dr. Climo, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, a fascinating topic on channeling. We've, you know, been exposed to it somewhat, and I've been present when it's been happening. I'd like to research more myself. How did you get started with this? I know you're in a number of things, including consciousness and metaphysics and so forth. Where did channeling start?
Well, I began this lifetime, this incarnation, as a creative person. I still am, but began really as a poet and an artist. That's how I identified myself. That's the mark I wanted to leave in the world. And as I became involved in that area, really in early adolescence, maybe even 10, 11 years old, getting involved with the creative process and verbally and visually and so on, I began to realize that things seemed to be coming to me from beyond me. There was a self-transcending process going on. I was putting my antenna out or accessing, I was sort of transcending myself, or things were kind of coming into me, and the normal skin encapsulated ego, the normal boundaries that keep us all sort of insular, it's a permeable membrane, and stuff can fly in and out. And sometimes if you're psychic or maybe a creative person or an artist or a very open-minded person, you literally can process, the universe blows things in your window, you know, they end up in your lap. And I always wondered where the hell it came from. It was and still remains mysterious. Where does the poet, the novelist, the playwright, the filmmaker, where do they get the stuff from when it just sort of comes to them?
That's a good question. What did you call it? Skin encapsulated
ego. Yeah, I think that was a phrase by Alan Watts or somebody, or maybe it was Aldous Huxley.
Yeah, that's interesting, and you make good points. So you've wondered about where all this stuff comes from, and then what? That got you the channeling.
I've always been sort of open, and being open means that the universe sort of seeps into you. There was an analogy that was used, I believe, by Aldous Huxley. He used the term mind at large in capital letters. But if there's mind at large out there, you can say it's God's mind, the universal mind, the collective conscious, the collective unconscious. There's this big, humongous thing that maybe contains everything and all ideas and all thinking and all consciousness. But let's just say mind at large, the way Huxley called it. And then he made the analogy that if there's mind at large, there's a reducing valve for each of us that connects mind at large to our own individual and individuated minds and consciousnesses. Most of us have a fairly tight setting on that reducing valve. But some of us, on purpose or accidentally, can dilate that aperture, that reducing valve, and let more of mind at large in. So the analogy is it's like this little valve, and if you expand it and open it up more, psychedelically or meditationally or prayerfully or by happenstance, more of the contents and the capacities of mind at large, like with hyphens, can come into local mind, your mind, my mind. And so whether you're an artist or a creative person or a psychic or a channel, you occasionally, sometimes you can control it, sometimes you can't, more of that mind at large and its contents and capacities comes through to the local mind, and there's a self-transcending experience, and this kind of human potential gets actualized more. There's a kind of an optimum performance that can happen that I've always been fascinated by.
John, you got a question?
Yeah, I was going to say, John, all the things that you just named in terms of like, and I don't want to say occupations, but orientations, are all right brain oriented. Do you find that interesting, or do you think that's part of it?
Well, it's part of it. I mean, Andy, you could sort of say, in an extended analogy, that it comes in right in a right-brained way, and then there, right through the corpus callosum, is the left brain to then process it, to put it into language, to make it linear, sequence it, categorize it out in the batches. And that's a way to say that it takes both, both components. Now, I tell people, I've been teaching in doctorate programs for 35 years. I'm basically a creative person, an artist. And I freak a lot of people out in psychology and in higher education in general. The more tightly wrapped people, because I'm not very tightly wrapped. Like, how did you get here? How did you get that doctorate? How did you get away with being the kind of person you are? Because most people you run into, the professorial types, the eggheads, the nerds, the experts, are very much usually left brain and really fairly tightly wrapped. So I tell people after all these years, I say, I come to realize that I make my living tightening loose people and loosening tight people. So we were talking about kind of tightening loose people by putting the left brain on top of the right brain, but you can also the other way around, which I work with a lot. I take very loose, open, more right brain people, and because I chair dissertations and I help people with their research and thinking and serve as an editor and all that, I in a sense am their surrogate left brain that without either their version of it for themselves or me, they would be kind of a basket case of being all over the place. It's like that saying, be open-minded, but don't be so open-minded your brains fall out.
Right. So where did channeling come into this whole mix then?
Well, as a poet, I would start writing, or I feel inspiration coming on. Let's put it that way. Okay. I feel inspired, possessed, taken over by. Not sure where, from where, or what, or who, whether it was an entity, or a diffuse presence, or mind at large, or spirit guide, or my higher self, or who the hell knew, but something would seem to kind of overshadow me and co-dwell with me in my subjectivity and my consciousness. And I found that many times, and this is true of many creative writers and other kinds of artists, something sort of kicks in and takes over, and you kind of get out of the way. You actually are witness. You're over to the side witnessing something taken over. And that is a form of channeling. where something comes through you. It comes to you or through you, and you're a mediator. You're a channel. Mm-hmm. And it's not really emanating from you. Most psychologists that I work with, and I train clinical psychologists, I shrink, so to speak. Their attitude toward all this is that anybody that thinks they're channeling is fooling themselves, and all they're really doing is it's self-generated material. It's their own personal creativity. But they're dissociated from it. They're separated apart from it, so that it seems like it's not coming from themselves. And so it's like a ventriloquist that doesn't know he's putting his own voice to his own dummy, you know? But it's really coming from him. And that's what most skeptics think channeling is. It is self-generated, but you're not connected to the fact, you're not aware that it's really just coming from yourself. It's not external to you. Because for most people in psychology or the sciences, there's no such thing as like hearing a voice that's external to you unless you're crazy.
Yeah.
The only way, if you're hearing a voice and you don't think it's you, you just don't think it's you, but it's really you. It's part of you coming from your own unconscious, but you're dissociated or separated from it. And so, and that can be functional or dysfunctional. But when I interviewed a lot of creative writers and novelists and playwrights and so on about their creative process and other kinds of people in dance and music and composers and so, that they would tell me about how they were kind of taken over by the creative process at these those crucial times. They got out of the way, and by my definition, it was a form of channeling, because I define channeling as something coming to or through you from something beyond you that you mediate through yourself, and it couldn't happen without you as the mediator, and you're kind of a go-between. You have a foot in two worlds. You're in this world, and you have a body, and you have a brain, and you have thoughts, and you have a language, but at the same time, you are connected to or something from beyond you and beyond that realm is connecting to and into you and through you, either talking through you or to you, like in the mind's eye or the mind's ear, and you pass it on. So you are a mediator, and this is like a shaman's role. In other cultures, it's often called the shaman. The shaman is of this world, but the shaman is able to alter consciousness and go to other realms, levels of reality, and worlds, and bring back information or powers, talk to ancestors, power animals, spirits, whatever, and provide a service for people on our level of reality who can't do that by themselves. So I think a lot of creative people, a lot of artists, channels, psychics, provide that between worlds mediation.
So what's the source of this?
Well, in the channeling book, I go through, you know, probably 100 pages just dealing with the potential kinds of sources or the reported kinds of sources over hundreds of years. This goes back to the Bible. I mean, was Christ, you know, when Christ talks about, you know, my father tells me this, or I'm going to go to the Father and this and that, was Christ God incarnate? Was it one and the same thing? Or was God, you know, was Christ the Son of God and was getting information, was he channeling his Father? You know, and there's different schools of thought on that. And but if Christ was a channel of God the Father, then he was channeling. But people say, no, he wasn't channeling. He was the Father. Well, how come if you look at the Bible, the rubrics of it, the stuff said to be said from Christ, it sounds a hell of a lot like he's talking like it was a channeling process. And so that's been going on throughout history.
So there's a question in the chat room. Is it possible your subconscious coming through rather than allowing your consciousness to be dominant?
Yeah, that's what I said. That is one of the competing hypotheses. And most of mainstream neuroscience and psychology and psychiatry, they choose to explain channeling, as people like me define it and point to it. They choose to define it as a process of dissociation where your own unconscious or your own creative precincts within you come up from within to your consciousness, and you can speak it or put it into language or share it with someone else, but you're sitting there thinking, that's not me. That's beyond me. But that's an entity. That's something else. Or it's even telling you it's an entity. But the skeptic will say, no, it's really part of you. There is no such thing as non-self-generated stuff like that.
And, of course, the subconscious, I mean, we could easily say it could be the higher self. It could be a lot of other things.
Yeah, I'm very much a consumer of research and theory that says there's not just a Freudian psychoanalytic view of the unconscious. That's a really kind of a pessimistic view that the unconscious is a bunch of stuff we repress out of consciousness because it's too nasty and dirty and you want to rape your mother and you know, all kind of taboos and stuff. So you keep stuff down there. It's like the id. You keep stuff down there and it can sneak out in permission-given ways, like through symbol systems, through dreams, through creative activity sometimes. But it's kind of a very furtive kind of a thing. There's a censor on top of it because the goddamn thing should be censored. Your ego can't handle it. That's the normal view of the unconscious, at least in the clinical realm, and I don't like it at all. It's a very unsavory view. I like the notion of an unconscious. Carl Jung split from Freud because he had a larger view of the unconscious, and others have too, and I do too, which is the unconscious includes the higher self or the God within, or all the unexplored aspects of yourself that you normally can't always volitionally access consciously, but it's there somewhere. So actualizing that potential, making the unconscious conscious, is part of the endeavor that religious spiritual paths do, that meditation looks for, that transpersonal psychology has practices to look at. And that's what I'm interested in, is accessing this unconscious, which I don't know, like the skin encapsulated ego, I don't know where the boundaries stop and start. If you go into your unconscious far enough down in there, when does it stop being your own personal unconscious and become a collective unconscious, or the mind at large, or God's mind? I don't know.
Yeah, those are good questions. So on this topic of sources, kind of talk about that a little bit more. I mean, are there extraterrestrial sources potentially?
Yeah. Now, the older term, the term before channeling was around, which is really a 20th century term, and it turns some people off because they have a whole connotation of what it means, and there's a lot of negative press on it and stuff, and I kind of have to wince about that, but I have to live with it. Before channeling was a term, there's other things like prophecy and being a seer in the third eye and things like that, but mainly it was called mediumship.
Right.
And mediumship, being a medium, not a channel, but being a medium, that was a very limited way of looking at who you could communicate with as a channel. A medium only communicates with deceased human spirits, discarnate or deceased human spirits, spirits of humans who survived physical death and are still knocking around in the astral plane, the afterlife, wherever the heck they are. And if you're lucky, if you can tune into them and you're psychic enough or whatever, or they're strong enough to come more toward our end of the spectrum, you can make a connection and you can communicate messages from or by means of deceased spirits. And that was mediumship. Now, for me, channeling is a larger term. It's more inclusive than just entities or communicating sources that are deceased human spirits. That's a subset of channeling we call mediumship. Now, channeling includes a lot more. I have a whole section of my book on the kinds of sources that have been reported to be channeled. One of my favorites is extraterrestrials who are not of the human lineage. And when I was in high school, decades ago, before most of your readers were born, No, we're talking 1959 this was. I'm a Peter Pan kid that doesn't want to grow up, so I'm civilized. I really am. I tell my doctoral students that. I say, I'm younger than you are if you really stop and think about the way I'm sounding here. I'm like a kid. I'm an adolescent. But I did my high school senior thesis in English class in 1959 on Project Blue Book, which was one of the very first government studies of UFOs. And so I've been tracing ufology and extraterrestriology as long as I have parapsychology and psychical research and metaphysics and so on. But I mention that because I've made a special study of channeling extraterrestrials. I'm finishing a book called Close Encounters of the Inner Kind, Channeling Extraterrestrials. And there's something called a UFO Congress. Some of your listeners may have gone to it or heard of it. Mm-hmm. I think they've discontinued it now, but they did about 15 annual conferences like that, or congresses. I presented it, I think, the third one, in which I brought together a whole day's worth of channels who specialize in channeling extraterrestrials. And I had them all go into trance and do their thing, or not trance, or whatever they were doing. And then I gave a keynote talk. After I gave my keynote talk, before the channels had their parts of the day, I finished my keynote talk, and just talking, whatever was coming to me. And one of these channels, Bashar, Daryl Anka, who channels an entity, Bashar, kind of a gray entity, and Daryl gets up after I finish my talk and starts to applaud and looks around at everybody, and he points to me and says, "Now that was channeling." All I was doing was giving a talk. See where the subtle line is?
Mm-hmm.
I get carried away. I get inspired when I talk. I don't know who's talking to me or through me or at me or giving me information, feeding me lines. But I get into a mildly altered state of consciousness. I relinquish control enough that I don't know what the hell's going to say. And I've been doing that for decades.
Hmm.
So I do a kind of challenge that doesn't involve entities, but involves a definite feeling of surrendering, willfully surrendering myself to information, energy, and just kind of a vectoral flow through me of stuff where I'm being used. I'm asking to be used, and I'm being used.
Uh-huh.
And it never gets too much out of control or too, you know, it's not speaking in tongues or gobbledygook particularly at all, because it's going through my left hemisphere as well. And I'm a poet, and I know language and love it, and I can craft it very carefully, even on the wing as it kind of passes a threshold into my consciousness. And so it was kind of a compliment that Daryl Anka, who's made his reputation channeling Bashar, going into the trance and channeling Bashar, very very technical stuff, some of it, very interesting stuff for left-brained people even,
uh-huh.
That he was saying to me, he was deferring to me and saying, now that guy there, me, was really channeling, just like you claim I'm channeling,
mm-hmm.
although it wasn't an entity. So I didn't Bashar didn't talk through me, but I don't know who was talking through me. I've had psychics say, well, I can see a 12-foot Pleiadian behind you.
Mm-hmm.
There's an American Indian guide there who was kind of right by your left side. I don't see that stuff. I've kept in ignorance of it, which allows me to talk to scientists and academics sometimes, because they don't feel like they're a have, not, and I'm a have. Yeah, yeah, you can't do those things. I can't. I'm special. I say, look, I'm locked out of this stuff, too. I study it. I read about it. I'm fascinated by it.
Well, we have a caller on the line with a question in a similar regard. Gabriel, are you with us? Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks.
You have a question for Dr. Klimo?
Yeah. Actually, I was outside one night, and a UFO came to visit me. So I'm curious if you can tell me who it was and what they wanted. And
well, you're asking that question as if I had identified myself as someone with certain kinds of psychic abilities that I could telepathically or clairvoyantly or remote viewing wise or out of body wise get in touch with or get glimpse of, you know, backward in time or whatever, who or what visited you, what you experienced. That's the kind of question you take to a psychic. So I had this, like you just said just now, I had this kind of experience. Can you tell me what that was? Can you tell me who they were? Now, somebody who's sufficiently authentically psychic, and there are those people around, believe me, I'm a parapsychologist, I study this, this is authentic stuff. Not everybody's that way, but enough of them are, that they will tell you. I can't tell you because I'm not that kind of a psychic. But I can tell you that from all my experience and research, there's a high likelihood that you weren't just misperceiving, hallucinating, delusional, that there really was a real damn thing you were experiencing. And it's a lonely business when there aren't a whole bunch of people to corroborate it and say, I saw it too. I saw the same thing. Then you're less, you're considered less dubious.
Gabriel, can you tell us about the experience?
Well, I was just outside, and I heard a humming.
Can you speak up a little bit too, please?
Okay, I was outside, and I heard a humming. And I was actually kind of up close to my house, so the roof, the pitch of the roof was blocking my view. So I leaned back, and I seen three large lights right above me in a triangle shape. And it just stayed there. You know, I looked at it, and it kind of disappeared. I didn't see it leave. I didn't see it take off. And then I heard something going on the side of my house, like rocks being thrown at my fence. And so they were trying to get my attention, and they obviously felt that they can try to communicate with me. So I was just curious, you know, if what they wanted, who they were, because I've been told different things about different entities and, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's a fairly familiar scenario you're describing, between the three lights and I would say that one generalization I can safely make from all my decades of research is that, and I know many of the leading researchers as well in UFO area, one of the very best was John Mack, who unfortunately died in a car accident in London, but he was one of the really outstanding people. Anyway, most reported extraterrestrials, from contactee and abductee experiencers, seem to communicate telepathically, most of them. So in most cases, they wouldn't have to throw rocks at your fence. they would appear kind of like a voice in the middle of your head, or just like a thought form, you know, telepathically from them to you. And that's the preponderance of the interspecies communication between many kinds of extraterrestrials and us. Now, majority of extraterrestrials, I think, are capable of materialization and dematerialization. They can change their frequency, their mode of manifestation, and can move in and out of our level of reality. Our physical, what physicists would say is our level of reality, that's not necessarily their home base level of reality, wherever they're from. They may be from a higher dimension, a higher frequency, and their technologies, whether it looks like a UFO or not, it can often shape-shift. It's possible for them to move themselves around, but they don't have to do it that way. They can maybe teleport or do kind of like out-of-body stuff like some of us experience. And so in communication with extraterrestrials, sometimes it's telepathic. Sometimes they're equally physically embodied. I mean, you have a physical body, I have a physical body here on Earth. Earth is physically embodied. But their home planet, their home dimensionality, their habitat may not be physical level reality like ours, but their technology, they've evolved to the point far beyond us that they can move in and out of different dimensions and density levels, and that's the way that they can, like, just see that in a twinkling appear or disappear, or how small ETs can move right through a wall or carry you by contact. You get right next to them, and you go right through an opaque wall with them. This has been reported literally hundreds and hundreds of times to the point that I believe there's objective reality to it. But what level of reality it's operating on, I don't know. So if you ask who these characters are, I would say they probably really are from a non-Earth tradition or lineage. They have the technology to get here real quick. They're not limited by the speed of light, probably. Since most habitable planets would take you too damn long to get here if you couldn't see the speed of light. If physicists say you can't exceed the speed of light, I beg to differ. There's research to show that there you can go multiple levels higher than the speed of light. You can slow the speed of light down like almost like a superfluid or sluggishly. And extraterrestrials will tell you, some of them, they will actually divulge some of their technology of their propulsion systems or how they work, how they move in and out of dimensions. It's fascinating stuff. So I'm always on the lookout for extraterrestrials, either through channel sources or conscious contactees or whatever, who will share more about their culture and their technology. Many of them don't want to share too much of that because they see us kind of like a kindergarten or a stone age, poking each other's eyes out like the Three Stooges. You know, are we ready for prime time? Are we ready for the cosmic neighborhood to join as co-equals with them? Not too bloody likely, but we're moving toward it, and we have a heart. You know, a lot of extraterrestrials are portrayed as like of a hive mentality, like the Borg, you know. They don't have any souls. They need, like in The Wizard of Oz, they need to go to Oz to get a heart or a soul. And we have to go to Oz to get smarter, you know, or to live together more decently. You have to get the secrets of that in that metaphor.
Well, Gabriel, sorry we couldn't answer your question directly. You have another question or statement you'd like to make?
Well, I just wanted to say is I kind of felt like they thought that maybe the ship was intimidating, and that's kind of why they either, you know, hit the lights or however you want to put it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because this thing was very close to me. I mean, very close. It was probably only like two stories right above my head, you know?
Yes.
And so I was looking at it, and I kind of, you know, had that thought, you know, like, I mean, I didn't, like, take off running or anything, but I was kind of like, whoa, you know, this is crazy. And so then it kind of, like, just disappeared, and then that's when I heard them on the side of my house. So I know they were, like, trying to contact me and stuff in a way of maybe more on my level, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, like throwing rocks at the fence. It's kind of like your next-door neighbor doing it or a boyhood playmate. You know, it's kind of homey and almost familiar. They're not trying to, you know, to come on too strong. And my guess would be that they have the capacity to see into your guts. They have telepathic insight into what's going on with you. Because so many of these races do talk about that, and that they have the capacity, and show and evidence that this is true, that they probably sensed what kind of the level of apprehension you had, the timidity, but the curiosity, and they were trying to find a connection point that didn't kind of scare you off, because a lot of people kind of like panic when you read those early Whitley Strieber books, you know, like Communion. I mean, he was just always about to throw up with fear, you know, because there's something truly, I mean, I get scared by spiders. They're kind of alien to me, and my whole body just reacts, you know. And I, what would it be if it was truly a non-human presence? And often they are insectoid-like, where they are kind of embryo-looking like, or they're very different from us. A lot of them are less different. And so we have a kind of a gut reaction. It's an alien thing. We're reacting to absolutely the unknown, and they know that. And so they have technologies, and some of these are mental technologies. These are psychological capacities that involve subtle energy or dimensionality, or they can actually affect our brains and our consciousnesses so that we can perceive them, let's say, like an owl. Very often, when you're being hypnotically regressed as an abductee to a very traumatic point when you have the interaction, and they put memory blocks on you, let's say, and you'll go back and you remember seeing an owl, let's say, an owl at the window. You're not seeing the extraterrestrial's face. That would be too freaky out too much. We're back to Freudian, the unconscious. You're present in the unconscious. And so they have the capacity to do that kind of a thing, maybe to protect you, maybe to stay secretive. It's too premature to let them really see you. And there is a kind of a secretiveness in the sense that they really don't want to land on the White House lawn yet. You know, we're trying to do it in increments. And if you look at show business, films, science fiction, I think the unconscious of many of our creative people have paved the way by them, unbeknownst to their conscious selves, they've been channeling information and scenarios from Arthur C. Clarke on that have been sneaking into the collective conscious and unconscious so that we'll be more prepared for the other, for our cosmic neighbors. And so you probably did a little dance there. It would sound like almost like a kind of a friendly dance. They're up there. It's kind of, what the hell is that? These three lights. And yet at the same time, they're throwing rocks at the fence. They're on the side. They're like digging almost like a dog. It wasn't real. It really wasn't an engulfing experience. It didn't sound like it.
Do you have any missing time, Gabriel?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I was like abducted or anything. I just, you know, that's why I was curious. I kind of got the feeling, you know. I know that you said that they're kind of like trying to see what level, you know, like level of fear or whatever. I kind of did get the feeling that I was being like observed in a way, you know. That's the feeling that I got. But I also felt that, I don't think anyway that they meant any harm. I just think that they thought that I was open to them, but didn't know to which level, so they were trying to like test that out. That's what I feel like.
I would think you're probably pretty much on the money. I would trust yourself in that regard. Now, a skeptic would be overhearing this and say, well, how the hell does he know what he's talking about? I don't either one of them know what the hell they're doing. Just fooling themselves. Well, I'm too far down the road to want to spend too much time and energy burning psychic calories trying to fight back with skeptics who are closed-minded already biased. But the point here is that most extraterrestrial My studies of this ultimate cross-cultural studies, the different worlds, the different levels of reality, different kinds of beings besides human ones and physically embodied ones, it's a huge, vast house of many mansions, multiple, multi-dimensional universe, and I love it. It's fascinating, and I'm now absolutely convinced of that, absolutely convinced. And I'm somebody who trains clinical psychologists, so don't call me crazy. Or you can. You can go ahead and do it. But I've heard a sufficient number of stories and read whole book-length studies of extraterrestrial types who are malevolent, who are negative. They're what's called the Law of One, the raw material, R-A, channeled by Carla Rucott McCarty. She channeled the extraterrestrial raw into a series of books called The Law of One, the raw material. And without going into more detail than that, raw made the point to us, through her, that throughout the universe there's all kinds of beings, physically embodied ones, other kinds of levels of embodiment, millions of years advanced of us in all kinds of shapes and forms and sizes. But you can divide it into one of two basic camps. The beings are either service to self or service to other. Service to self is what it sounds like. You're self-centered. You're self-serving. You're not really that mature yet. You're egocentric, as developmental psychologists would say. You're taking care of number one, yourself. You've got your own base appetites. You don't have much compassion. You don't have much real empathy. You can't get outside of your own frame of reference. You're not very open-minded. That's service to self. I'm taking care of number one here. service to other is what you translate into or evolve into over time, over maybe many lives. That's why I think reincarnation makes sense. It makes a lot of living to evolve that way, species specifically and individually. And service to other means it's more the Christ consciousness. It's more service to other. You're more caring. You're taking less evolved beings and patiently helping them like a big brother or sister evolve. It's like the source channeled by Alice Bailey, called the Tibetan. Alice Bailey was one, along with Blavatsky, the Theosophical material, early part of the 20th century, some of the best, most interesting channel material I've ever read, the Blavatsky and Bailey. Anyway, Bailey, her entity, one of her entities was called the Mahatma in Indian, as was with Blavatsky. And Bailey's source identified himself as one of them as the Tibetan, and she referred to him as the Tibetan. I don't remember if he was physically incarnate or not, but he would send information through her, and she'd write it in book form. The Tibetan would start some of the books that he dictated to.
Okay, everybody. Sorry for the glitch. For some odd reason, my internet just went out, and I restarted it, so now we're back on, and we apologize for the glitch. So it wasn't the Skype gods. Tonight, Kathy's in there saying, I hear a lot of cursing. Well, unless you're apparently reading my mind. So sorry to cut you off, but we lost our callers too. So if you're listening.
Actually, Catherine had a question in the chat room. She wants to know, can you learn how to channel?
There's been people around during the kind of the heyday of channeling in the mid late 80s and early 90s that sort of specialized in helping people to do that. I have a section in my channeling book, how to channel, how to do it. I think I put it, and I try to bring together a lot of different perspectives, including from channels who now are trying to help other people learn to do their version of it.
Hey, John, let me interrupt you just for a second. I just want to state, if you were on the line waiting to talk to Dr. Klimo, please call back. We hadn't actually lost you, but we'd like you to call back, and then we'll get you right on. Go ahead.
Yeah, so there are ways to maximize the possibility of being able to do some form of channeling. Now, there's different kinds of channeling. There's automatic writing. There's kind of a mildly altered state where you sort of relax and get kind of daydreamy or what's called a hypnagogic, sort of moving toward the unconscious level of consciousness, but you're still conscious and lucid. And then information can maybe come to you that way. Mainly you want to get out of the normal baseline waking consciousness that's very kind of monkey chatter, orienting toward the external environment and what you're all conditioned and used to, because that will work against the still small voice within or the subtle forces that make an application where you're turning your attention with quality of attention to them in order to pick them up. And so you need to set aside a quiet place. You need to put your intention on it to intend that it happen, your attention and intention, try experiment with different forms of meditation and relaxation techniques that relax the normal waking consciousness, move you into this kind of focus. It's like a self-hypnosis in a sense, mm-hmm. where the suggestion is, I'm suggesting to myself that I'm going to open myself to sources that are not physically based, that may not be human, that may be angels, that may be the animal kingdom, maybe plant devas, who knows what you might tune into, but you can control it. You can say, I only want to hear from benign entities or spirits. I don't want to open. If I just open myself to anybody, that's why the Ouija board has such a bad reputation. People get boozed up or playful and have a pajama party, and they hang out with the Ouija board, and they don't give it no respect, you know, so to speak. It's a kind of you bring a playful and a kind of a irreverent attitude toward the situation, not a very ritualistic or ceremonial serious endeavor like a good shaman would. You're not doing that. You're doing like it's amateur hour. And so what do you get back? You knock on the door coming from that place, you're likely to get back playful, stupid, imposter-like trickster entities too. And that's a lot of the history of people playing around with mediumship and channeling get a lot of crap. You know, they get somebody saying, I'm Jesus Christ, you know, go kill your sister. Where's the discernment? You know, where the respect and the discernment to go into this, and also to, you know, you're the boss. You should be the boss. You're creating your own reality. You're co-creating it to a large extent. Go into the situation saying, I would like this to happen. It's like a prayerful or a meditational setting. Relaxed consciousness, focused consciousness. It's related to meditation. It's related to self-hypnosis. And then set the scene and ask what you, and see what you ask for something. And then make your mind as much of a tabula rasa. Be receptive. Surrender yourself, which is not an easy thing to do. And then just wait. I mean, most psychics that are really good that I know, when they're asked, how do I know, how do you know when you're getting something that's truly coming from a psychic source and not your own unconscious, not your own imagination? They say it feels different, it tastes different. Phenomenologically, I can tell the difference introspectively inside of myself. And I think that's what happens when you learn how to channel. You know when you finally sort of hear a voice within, it tastes different, feels different, sounds different than yourself muttering to yourself, you know? And you get to know yourself better that way. So there's you can start with that chapter in my book about how to channel.
John, there's another question in the chat room that kind of follows up with this. And the question is there a point where a person can get taken over by something that wants to be channeled?
Yes. I was just contacted again by someone I had worked with a couple of years ago. To the point that she would meet with me almost every week. I was trying to help her. I wasn't trying to be a shrink or a psychic or anything like that. But she was possessed by, we'll call it. She was taken over by a being that claimed to be from like the 18th century, and who insisted that this entity insisted to her that she was going to be her spirit guide, whether she liked it or not. She knew better. She was kind of a bully spirit, and she just like got inside her head, got inside her psyche, and wouldn't leave. And she's been there for years. She went through two marriages, broke up because of...
And that's not a psychological issue?
Sure it is. That's the point that I said. I would say, look, I don't know whether that entity is part of you, you know, like a sub-personality, or whether it's a totally separate being like you claim it is and like the entity claims it is. It doesn't matter what the hell the ultimate nature of the reality of that thing is, part of you or not. It's no damn good for you and anybody else. It's toxic. It's a takeover artist. And so on those principles, my recommendation is, you know, excise it, lobotomize it, get it out of there, do a ritual, do an exorcism, do a depossession.
Take your power back.
Yeah, right. So possession, what you're sort of describing is somebody says, I want you to be my channel. I want you to be my psychic bridge to this level of reality because I'm not on it anymore. I mean, your level of reality. But they, if they're really good, if they're benign, if they have any understanding at all, they would ask you, and they'd ask you nicely, and they'd be very thankful, and you have the right to refuse it.
All right. We have a call to take. Paul has been patient with us. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Hey there, guys. I actually have a question for you. Well, I actually call a bunch of this BTR shows right here in BTR because there seems to be a lot of paranormal activity of fans. So am I. And the thing is that I actually witnessed. I live in Westchester, New York, by the way. And I've listened to some friends say they see a lot of paranormal activity by the woods. I mean, is this possible? Because I've been trying to. I want to go there and check it out. You know, stay at night in the woods and just check out the. All the paranormal activity that they say they saw. I mean, have you guys heard about some paranormal activity in Westchester, New York?
No, we haven't, but it could certainly be. And my advice is to, you know, if you're interested in this, get a little training, go with a team, ask them if you can
go
with them.
Yeah, because the thing is that my buddy, so he saw some nigger sorts.
Yeah, I figured that was what it was, and I had my button. On button. Okay, let's hang up, Paul. Goodbye, Paul. Don't ever call back, moron. Okay. And just, you know, for any of you morons who want to call up and do that, and I say that very lovingly, because there's a lot of things I'm going to say about you, but I won't say them. I always have my mouse pointer on the hang-up button, so... You won't get much out. All right. Now, that having been put behind us, John, I have a question for you that I have been waiting to ask for a while since you were going to be on this program. This has been my observation about channeled messages, and I'd like to know your position on it, your perspective on things. My observation has been that I don't know that there's one that hasn't met this criteria, and that is the messages are so ambiguous, and honestly, they're feel-good messages that don't have a lot of meat to them and really don't tell you much. What are we to make of those?
Well, I agree with you. I have a library of many, 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 many hundreds of books just for the channel part of it. And after a while, and I try to buy each new book. I mean, maybe I'm stupid that way or gullible. I'm always looking for new, fresh information, for stuff with meat on it and so on, and that's convincing and the like. And there's a similarity across so much of it, including within the subset of extraterrestrial channeled stuff. Like, there's like 15 books out there supposedly channeled from Pleiadians. Mm. And Pleiadians have a habit of sounding very innocuous, very kind of universal, kind of heart chakra. It's like if you use the analogy, you put kind of an ornate picture frame around something, an email or something, or a tape passage or something. You put this frame around it, this ornate frame that's labeled, this is channeled. Then this is like conceptual art. You then bring a different consciousness to it. You kind of, you expect something different, or you read more into it, or give the benefit of the doubt to it. But if you didn't have that frame around it, like us, you and I talking, we don't put a frame around ourselves, and nobody puts it around us that says, he's coming from his higher self. Really listen now. Right. This is meaningful. Or he's known to have hung out in the mothership with these Arcturians, and let's listen to them. Well, if you didn't hear that preface and you were just listening to me, well, he's just a fellow human being, incarnate being who's fallible and limited and read some books, is articulate. But so what? Why should I lay at his feet this special higher dimensional on a giant thing? And that's the free ride that the whole channeling label puts on things. Whether it's authentic channeling or not, and the jury stays out about most of that. I mean, what is the litmus test to truly, put the electrodes on the temporal lobes or whatever, and find the sensing up the wavelength of that person's genital channeling? We're not there yet technologically. So we get this infinite regress that if a psychic really trusts, is this person psychic, another person, and they use their psychic ability to say, no, that person's not really psychic, I'm not trusting my friend's psychic ability, but then I have to go to another psychic to check his ability. It never stops. So where does it stop, and where is the real preferred frame of reference?
So what do we make of so you're basically saying that we're listening to these channeled messages out of context?
They're put in a context. That's the part that makes it more difficult to deal with. They're automatically put in a prefabricated context. This is channeled. This is according to what Klimo calls this process that he's looked at throughout history. It's true. And because he follows this process and this procedure, it is otherworldly. It is transcendental. It is not what most human beings are capable of. And my argument is, no, we're all channels of God, the source of the universal holographic data pool, or potentially we can connect into the matrix of it all, and that's the true empowerment you were alluding to before. Why go to a psychic? Why go to a channel? Why go to somebody else's entity? Go to your own damn entity. And then with regard to yourself and your psychic, why do you go to your own entity that's spending itself on your entity? Spirit guide, why do you even need it? Wean yourself out of it, and why not just that kind of higher self within you, a connection to source of the universal? That's where I've gotten to. So the edition for my second, second edition of the channeling book, the preface of it, I say, I'm really not interested in channeling entities anymore, because they're already going to be fallible and limited, and we're entities. We're incarnate entities. Why do we spend so much time putting our attention on discarnate entities?
Yeah, right.
And so my interest now is channeling God. I want to go to the source of sources, the one where I can't lose.
So,
and then who the hell do I think I am doing that?
So you're basically, if I'm following you properly, and you correct me if I'm wrong, if you're saying, yes, they are ambiguous, and they are fallible, and they're not always right, and they don't always make sense, and why are we listening to them anyway? So,
well, it is a, I mean, religions have been doing this for millennia, that we don't authentically center into ourselves and work on developing our own potential and our own potential connection to source and inner wisdom and all that. We don't do it. We just say, give me a fatted calf. Give me the oracle. Give me someone who's drunk, who's dionysially drunk on their own altered state of consciousness.
So what do we make of this ambiguity with these
Well, my colleague Charles Tart, the parapsychologist and transpersonal psychologist, he used the term once. He said, just because you're dead doesn't mean you're wise. You know, there's a bunch of rabble and a whole mixed bag, a motley crew over there, drunks and alcoholics and suicides and not very bright people, not very spiritually evolved people. You know, and if you want to tune into them through a medium or a seance or whatever the hell knows what, you take your chances. Why did you turn your back on yourself and go over there? If somebody says, well, that's where the action is, that's where the party is. The party's over there. The party's within and through yourself, through the eye of a needle of going within. Well, I don't think so. I think Christ said go within or go into your own closet and make your own connections. And then people didn't want to hear that with all the priestly caste in the middle there. But what do you make of all this is that I think we have avoided really working on ourselves in the sense of spiritual evolvement and advancement. And there's and if you get very far with spiritual unfolding, there is psychic capacities begin to come on the way. And the spiritual paths warn you, many different kinds do. If you stay on this path to develop your spirit and your soul, beware, because along that route, as you move along it, you're going to have to take your spirits and abilities. And if you get caught up in them and titillated by them and they appeal to your ego, you get screwed up. So don't let that kind of affect you.
All right, so we only got, you know, 3 or 4 minutes left. So what I want to know is, again, what are we to make of this ambiguity? Is it that these entities are just, I mean, are these people who are channeling this ambiguous stuff, is it just put on? Is it made up? Or is it perhaps some of these entities are just that way, and they're basically taking us for a ride on a cult-like level?
Well, some of all of that you said. I mean, some of the entities who are authentically being channeled, they really are not us. They're not of this earth. But they don't necessarily have all the wisdom in the world either. They're going to be more evolved, less evolved. So we hang out with that. Then there are others who are tricksters or jesters or having a good time because we're making them into gods. But in general, I think most people who are channeling, authentically channeling, they're not trying to fool you. They're going to be fooling themselves on some level. But I don't know what percentage of people claiming to channel really are channeling. But I believe there's genuine channeling. There are genuine entities, other levels of reality. There's non-physical-based beings. I believe all of that. And so obviously I've got a whole lot that some of the channeling that comes across is portrayed that way, as the picture frame around it like that, is the case of it. And look, I've consumed enough of this stuff, probably more than anybody else I know of. There's a lot of extraordinary, wonderful, wise stuff. But could you not get it for your own grandma? You know, going to an Indian tribe in South Dakota?
I remember the Blossom Goodchild fiasco a year or two ago with, you know, the people saucer that her entities were channeling, telling them it's going to be here. You remember that? Or you were aware of that?
No, I'm worth it. Like that.
Well, and, you know, the thing I really appreciate her, I know she did it, and it was UFO that started to appear around Alabama. That makes sense. It's ideal. I don't know which paper was. Was that 2 years ago? Tomorrow? I think it was.
We're getting older.
15th or 15th, yeah. And you know, and of course, it never happened. And the thing I appreciated is she apologized. And I think it really was an existential crisis for her. But this is the thing that's always troubled me about channeled messages is, honestly, there's not a whole lot of meat. In the many that I have heard, there's just really not much there. And I appreciate what you're saying, that there's a lot of wisdom around, and it doesn't necessarily have to come from channeled entities.
That's the giving our power away kind of thing we're talking about. But there's a lot of channel, a percentage of channel material that's got a lot of meat on it. And so keep your hopes up there.
Who would you want to say?
The Seth material.
All right.
Seth is the thinking person's entity. Through Jane Roberts.
Well, let's talk about your website. Give out the website address.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is
you want my website address?
www.johnklimo.com.
johnklimo.com.
And people can order your book there, can they?
Yeah, the easiest thing is at Amazon.
Okay, let's go to Amazon.
It comes fast, it's cheaper, and they keep tabs on it.
Good. And so visit John, J-O-N, Klimo, K-L-I-M-O.com for more information. And we are getting out of time. Sorry about the level of the music. Let's see if we can turn it down. Sharon says it's drowning it out. Maybe that'll help. Anyway, we appreciate everybody joining us tonight. Dr. Klimo, thanks so much for spending your time with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk to people.
And John Rossi, thanks so much for co-hosting. Appreciate that.
Well, thank you for having us on.
And we give our thanks to Mike Jones for screening our calls. And, you know, with all credit to him, it's hard to tell. If people don't tell you, you don't know. So we apologize for that call that got through that wasn't very nice. Next week on Paranexus Universe, we have a Psychic Perspective hosted by Gregory Kent. He will be welcoming one of our Paranexus members, Lori Del Rio, a trance medium psychic, to the show. She's going to have some interesting things to say. And then, of course, don't forget the Sunday Informal Paranormal at 10 p.m. Eastern. John, what do you guys got going on?
Frank from Adventure Myth is going to be talking about his team's unique orientation to investigating myths and the paranormal, as well as talking about his experiences at our joint investigation of historic Jordan Springs last weekend.
Yeah, so that should be a good one. So join us on the same BTR channel here, Paranexus Universe, Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. We welcome you to join us at paranexus.org. If you have not been there, please visit us and join us as a member. Paranexus is 501c3. We're out of time, folks. Have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you again.